said the whale. So I'm going to tell you a story. And it's a true story, but someone from around here, one of your neighbors, just down the road. His name is Dan McGuire. And the story begins when Dan called his daughter, Tara, 2 years ago and told her he wanted to ride his bike across Canada. And she wasn't all that surprised. He had done it before, after all, a few times. Left to right and right to left. But that was years ago. This was different. Dan was now 80 years old. And he didn't only want to go from coast to coast. He wanted to touch the outer reaches of our country with his bike tires. He wanted to go to the farthest north, south, east, and west a person on a road could go. Wanted to touch the corner crusts of our sandwich, the ones the kids don't eat. "Why would you want to do that, Dad?" asked Tara. "You've done it before." "Because I love Canada," he said. Well, who could argue with that? Dan had taken up biking in his mid-40s when running had become too painful for his joints. He got on a bike one day and something happened. He felt content with the wind in his face and a burning in his thighs. He never said that exactly, but it must have been something like that, or he wouldn't have spent so much of his life on that uncomfortable bike seat. But Dan wasn't 40 anymore, he was 80. And he was suffering from, among other things, arthritis in his knees and hands, scoliosis that made his spine swirl like a snake, macular degeneration, and the biggie, Parkinson's disease. His once muscular frame was so diminished and the medications he took so overwhelming that occasionally when he fell asleep at the dinner table, his daughter would look at him and think he looked like a skinny, grieving question mark. So when Dan told his daughter, Tara, about his scheme to ride his bike all over Canada, top to bottom and side to side, Tara decided the best thing she could do was humor him. "I figured it'd probably never happen," she told me. Dan had different ideas. And before they knew it, Tara and her sister Janet had agreed to be Dan's support crew for the first stretch of his ride. And they were suddenly busy equipping a van and a tent trailer. They piled in sleeping bags and grizzly bear bangers, pots and pans and bug hats, bike parts and maps. British Columbia is way taller than it is wide. It took Dan, his daughter Janet, and Mocha the dog 3 days to drive from Vancouver up to Dawson City in the Yukon. They had to wait until the ice was off the river in order to cross it and for the summer road to be clear of snow. But they finally got the go-ahead, and Dan began his journey in late May of 2013. He began on the most western road in Canada, the top of the world highway, at the point where it borders Alaska. Pavement can't survive the elements up there. The so-called highway was rough, muddy, and rocky. Progress was slow, but Dan reveled in the ride. He stopped to take photos of majestic northern vistas. He watched wolves, elk, bighorn sheep, and eagles as he pedaled along alone. Janet would flag him down every few hours and remind him to drink. She'd make him meals on their camp stove, and she'd encourage him to eat as much as possible. The Parkinson's medication that Dan was taking suppressed his appetite, and he needed calories to accomplish the 10 hours of cycling he was doing each day. When he tired, they'd tie a bright ribbon to a scrubby tree by the roadside to mark the spot where they'd stopped. They'd fasten the ribbon, shuttle to the nearest camp spot, bed down for the night, get up the next morning, return to the ribbon, and start all over again. Dan's motto was EFI. EFI, you'll figure it out. Or maybe not. First word is every. The last word is inch. They hung a left near Dawson City and headed north up the Dempster Highway for Canada's most northerly road at Inuvik. Thank goodness, thought Janet, that there was no road to Tuktoyaktuk, or they would have had that in their sights. They made it as far as the campground at Tombstone Territorial Park. When they got there, they were told that the road ahead was closed for 13 kilometers, washed out by the heavy melt. And so they had to change direction. Dan vowed he'd come back and complete that northern stretch later, in the summer or the fall when the road had had a chance to dry out. After 3 weeks of tough sledding, they were closing in on Whitehorse. But it was time for Janet to go home. Tara, her husband, and their 10-year-old daughter flew up to take over as support crew. And so Dan began the second leg, heading southeast out of Whitehorse along the Alaska Highway with Alberta in his sights. While he rode, Tara and her family prepared meals, tried to keep him hydrated, did laundry and minor bike maintenance, found places to camp, and when available, hotels for Dan's weary bones and twisted spine. They read Robert Service poems by the campfire and swam in vast lakes. They rarely saw anyone else. There was not a power line, a street light, or a fresh vegetable to be found. Just endless, undulating miles of trees, lakes, and mountains. In Watson Lake, they had to tape the seams of their tent shut to keep out the millions of hungry mosquitoes. They played cards for hours at the side of the road and read books with bug hats on. And through the rain, the endless, dusty construction zones, and the unending climb over the Continental Divide, Dan kept pedaling. The black bears and grizzlies, wild bison and elk by the roadside didn't deter him. While everyone else fretted, Dan just laughed. He told them the animals are more interested in the dandelions blooming in the ditches than in a skinny old man with Parkinson's. He was getting weather-worn, bug-bitten, and skinnier by the day. He was losing so much weight that somewhere in northern BC, they had to buy him suspenders to hold up his bike shorts. He was also getting stronger. Because the Parkinson's made it hard for him to swallow, Dan often drank his half a beer at the end of each day through a straw. He walked with a slow shuffle. His voice faltered to a soft whisper when his Parkinson's meds wore off. He had trouble doing up his buttons and toothpaste tubes. And because his fingers didn't always cooperate, taking a shower and getting dressed could take him more than an hour. But through all of it, he kept riding. Once he was on his bike, he wasn't shaky or weak. Once he was on his bike, he was unstoppable. Once he was on his bike, he left the disease behind. He said the exercise helped to keep the parkies, as he called them, at bay. Eventually, however, Tara and her daughter Lila had to head home too. Tara to work and Lila to finish grade 5. Tara's husband, Cam, stayed on as Dan's wingman for a month, and a certain machismo settled on the adventure. They ate beans and bacon for breakfast and grew out their beards. But it wasn't all smooth sailing. There were hospital stops to get Dan hydrated. There were medications that had to be juggled. And then Cam had to go home too. That's when Dan's brother Larry from Saskatoon stepped up. Larry and his wife, Shirley, had been on cycling adventures with Dan in the past, and they were happy to spend a couple of weeks of their summer vacation to support him. But eventually, they too had to get back to their lives, and that meant Dan was going to be on his own. Everyone was worried about Dan cycling unescorted through the Canadian wilderness, but Dan assured everyone he could do it. He'd done it before. "I'll be fine," he said. And off he sat. He had pie with a bridge club at a recreation center, dinner with strangers, and a few times even a free night stay at a roadside hotel. His plan was working. He made it almost to Winnipeg before he called it quits. It was August. He had ridden over 4,000 kilometers. He called and said the Parkinson's was fine, but his back was bothering him. In fact, the pain in his back was making cycling almost unbearable. What he didn't mention, a small detail, and what his family didn't find out until later, was that he had fallen off his bike just west of Winnipeg and had been taken to hospital. It wasn't, apparently, the first fall. And so he came home. And Tara told her father that she was proud of him and that he'd done so much to prove what people with Parkinson's are capable of. Tara thought the ride was over. Dan was not so easily deterred. That autumn, the autumn of 2013, with his son Kevin as his roadie, Dan flew back to Whitehorse. There was the little matter of the unfinished most northern road, the Dempster Highway to Inuvik. They rented a camper fit for the outback, and they headed for the place he'd been forced to stop. EFI, remember? Tara told me that she had the feeling her father wanted to get the journey finished while he still could, before his once strong body began to shake and curl up like a fiddlehead. But after days and days of trying, just like in the spring, even Dan had to admit that the mud was too deep and thick to carry on. Just north of Eagle Plains, a highway supervisor stopped them and warned them that the ferry ahead might not be able to continue. A truck had been blown over by the wind. That northern box would remain unchecked for now. Over that winter, Dan bought himself a fancy three-wheeled bike. It was a sort of reverse tricycle with two wheels in the front and one in the back. It was a sweet machine, one that would, he explained, allow him to pull over and take naps without getting off it. Also, it meant they wouldn't have to worry about him falling over. After a few practice runs, a few crashes, and some necessary adjustments, Dan announced he was ready to set off again. There was a family meeting called to try to dissuade him. His children pleaded with him not to go. What if he broke down on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere? What if he needed a doctor and didn't have cell service? What if he was too cold and tired to continue in the middle of northern Ontario with no civilization for miles? They worried about him being taken advantage of, robbed, or, heaven forbid, squashed like a bug on the side of the road. Dan heard them out, took a moment to gather his thoughts, and then, in his shaky whisper, explained that he had a plan for all that. They sat back with relief. Well, what was it? People are nice, explained Dan. After 81 years on the planet, after his fair share of scrapes and mishaps, Dan's confidence in the general all-round goodness of the human race was a gamble that he was willing and pleased to take. People are nice. The family sat there dumbfounded. Was it fair to expect people you'd never met to buck up when you needed help? If you saw a gray-haired man fumbling with his water bottle or a flat tire on the side of the road, would you stop to check on him? Dan believed you would. Who were his children to tell him he was wrong? And so he left on leg two. And he left the way he wanted to leave. He left with their blessings. He decided to pick up where he had left off, just west of Winnipeg, EFI. He packed his bike into his van and began the drive from Vancouver east, which was actually a more frightening prospect to his family than his cycling. Dan had been embroiled in a feisty, winter-long debate with a motor vehicle branch about whether or not he could keep his driver's license. His reaction times were slowing. His test results were pending. As Tara remembers, he took off for Winnipeg before the final letter arrived. When he got there, he abandoned his van in a motel parking lot near the Winnipeg airport, and he climbed on his bike again. The tables had turned. Dan had become the mischievous teenager out in the world, taking risks and getting into trouble. His children were the parents, left waiting and wondering at home. He was still insisting he could do it alone. After all, he had attached a bright green flag to his bike for safety. And he had some food with him, just in case. His niece, Laverne, who lives in Winnipeg, drove him along the Trans-Canada to just west of Portage la Prairie and dropped him off on a lonely stretch of the highway. When she got home, she called her cousins out west and told them how worried she had felt, leaving this tiny little man on the side of the highway with its endless parade of huge semis zooming by. Everyone was worried, but they just have to wait and let the thing play out. Tara called him and asked him not to nap on the highway shoulder. He had a way of slumping over his trike like a limp doll that made him look unconscious. More than a few times, police had stopped to investigate, probably having received calls from concerned citizens who had reported a dead man on a tricycle on the side of the Trans-Canada. Dan was now 81. During his years as a touring cyclist, he had built up a large community of like-minded, some might say crazy, friends. It was these friends, the ones who understood his passion, who arrived, one by one, to blow on the embers of his dream. The very enthusiastic Chris caught up with him in Dryden and escorted him through an unpopulated and bug-infested sector of northern Ontario, through foul weather and fierce headwinds. A bike mechanic friend, Peter, and his wife, Diana, flew out to spend their two-week vacation in southern Ontario, zig-zagging along the highway. They were with Dan when he reached the southernmost point of Canada, at Point Pelee. Another box ticked. And Dan was picking up speed. In fact, he was having such a great time admiring the scenery on Pelee Island that he decided to go for an extra spin while waiting for the ferry back to the mainland. He wanted to touch his wheel to the most southern piece of real estate in our country. He took a little too long, no doubt stopping to take a photo. And the ferry couldn't wait, and the crew had closed the gates, strung the chains across the bow, and rolled up the plank, when, to the cheers of all the passengers already on the upper deck, Dan busted through the pay station at full speed, green flags flapping. That may be the first time in history the Pelee Island ferry returned to the dock to pick up a late passenger. The crew even threw together a few bucks to make a donation to Dan's Parkinson's Fund. All sorts of old bike buddies showed up, Ray, who showed him along the shore of Lake Erie, Ross, who rode shotgun to Quebec City, and another Peter, who met him near the New Brunswick border. When Dan was interviewed by the local CBC affiliate and PEI, the reporter asked him why he was doing what he was doing. And Dan said, "It's important to have a purpose." He took the ferry to Newfoundland alone, and members of the Parkinson Society of Newfoundland and Labrador met him and welcomed him to the Rock. They took him out to dinner and found him a place to stay. And a few days later, when Dan arrived at the Cape Spear Lighthouse by police escort, there was a small but enthusiastic crowd clapping and cheering. It was the place where Terry Fox had begun his journey, as far east as you can go and still be in Canada. Dan's daughter, Janet, had called the lighthouse to alert them of his arrival. And there on the rocky Atlantic shore, they lowered the flag and presented it to him. His long ride was over. But a flag, like our country, has four corners. Dan had quietly and slowly traversed more than 10,000 kilometers of our vast land under his own steam. Bad weather, illnesses, and other people's doubt had not deterred him. When Tara told him how proud she was and what a great accomplishment he had achieved, he said, "What do you think? Next September we finish the Dempster?" Dan McGuire will be 82 years old next September, and I am delighted to have told you his story so far today. But I'm more delighted to tell you that he's here with us. And I'm proud that I can introduce him to you right now. He's sitting right down there in the front row. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan McGuire. Right down there. And I should tell everybody at home that everybody's standing up. He's waving now. Should we get him on stage? He's coming up. He's walking over to the stage with Vinyl Cafe producer Jess Milton. How did that feel to sit there and listen to that?
Yeah, that was pretty good. Tara's quite a daughter to have.
Your daughter Tara, who wrote the story to me originally, you say she's quite a daughter to have. Your family was pretty great, actually. You scared them. Did you scare yourself?
No, I don't think I was ever frightened. No.
And are you really going to do the last bit of it down the up the Dempster?
Sure.
I know it's hard for you to talk. Is there something you'd like to say?
Well, I'd like to say thanks to all the people in the front row here, the people who helped me on the road ride.
who are here with you.
Yeah.
Who's here today? Peter is.
Well,
all these folks here. Yeah. About, all of you put up your hands. Who's here that helped? Hey, stand up and take a bow, you guys. There's six of them there. They're all the folks I mentioned? Okay, excellent. Well, listen, congratulations. I have to tell you, I read your story this afternoon to myself, and in the hotel room getting ready, and as I read it, I got all teary-eyed and up and started to cry. Big feelings gave me to read it and to be, and big feelings it gives me today to be able to share it with everybody.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. What's this?
Pin from Parkinson's.
Oh, thank you. It's a pin for Parkinson's.
Yeah. There was a fellow in Holland who devised the Parkinson tulip.
Uh huh. So there's a tulip on it and a green sort of swirl of some sort. And I don't have my glasses on. I can't tell much else. Yeah. But I'll put it in my lapel and I'll wear it. And when I do, I'll think of you. And I hope people will ask me about it. And when they do, I'll tell them your story and how proud I am to be able to say I know you.
Yeah, thank you.
Dan McGuire. Take a bow. Take one more last bow. Dan McGuire, everybody. Dan McGuire, everybody. This is Said the Whale.
I said goodnight to the moon. I said goodnight to the Mars. A red balloon in a great green room and a brush. I look out on the waves. Been stuck here for days. Ship you made with your magical ways and your love. Said I was born in a little white blanket. I was born in the middle of a mountaintop.
Well, we've come to the part of the show where it's time for us to say goodbye. Before we do that, I want to thank our musical guest, Said the Whale. And a special thanks this week for sharing her dad's story with us, to Tara McGuire. David Amers, the founding producer of the Vinyl Cafe, Doug Doctor and Bill Herault were the recording engineers this week. Lucas Lulu Simonetto is the lighting designer. Louise Curtis is the production assistant. Tina Lovecho is our road manager. Julie Penner is the music producer. Meg Masters is my long-suffering editor. The Vinyl Cafe is produced by Jess Milton, and I'm Stuart McLean in Chilliwack, British Columbia. We're going to let Sed the Whale sing us out. So long for now, everyone. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Dan. We'll see you next time.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.